the people walking in darkness. I've seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned.
When we think about Christmas, oftentimes we think about lights. Lights on houses, lights on trees, millions of lights covering and decorating. But in the Christmas story, light is significant. It's not just meant to be decorative, it's meant to be symbolic. When we think back to when Christmas celebrations began back around the Mediterranean world and around Europe, just like us in the Northern Hemisphere, they celebrated it around this time, December 25th, and it was the darkest time of the year as a reminder that this world can be dark. I'm just going to say it. This world can be a very, very dark place. Merry Christmas. Glad you came. You might be questioning a little bit like, come on, Bob, let's not get so heavy. How about a little bit of Christmas spirit? Before you accuse me of being the Scrooge or the Grinch or a cotton-headed Nitty Muggins, we need to understand that if we're going to understand the significance of Christmas, we've got to understand the darkness of this world. 8 centuries before Jesus was born in a manger in Bethlehem, there was a prophet, Isaiah, in the nation of Israel. And he prophesied about when the Messiah would come. And one of his prophecies, Isaiah chapter 9, is one that we quote often in and around Christmas. But I want us to read again. It was on the screen when we started, but I want to read how that passage begins, because Isaiah talks about darkness. Isaiah 9, verse 2. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. At the very beginning of the Gospels, when Jesus shows up on the scene in Matthew chapter 4, Jesus actually quotes this verse from the prophet Isaiah to let the people know, I am the light. I am the one that has come to those living in deep darkness. I'm the light. But I think a question should come to our mind. What was the darkness that Jesus stepped into that time in history? What was the darkness he was talking about? I'm glad you asked. I'm going to share it with you. Up until that time, it had been 400 years since the nation of Israel had heard the word of God. The very last book of the Hebrew scriptures, the prophet Malachi, it ended with this promise that God would send Elijah again, and he would be the forerunner for when the Messiah would come. For 400 years, God had been silent. And the people knew it. They wondered, God, are you there? Have you remembered us? Have you forgotten your people? They were in spiritual darkness. At the time that Jesus stepped on to the scene, the nation of Israel was under the oppressive leadership of Rome. From the very beginning of the Christmas story and the very beginning of Luke chapter 2, if you remember how the story begins, it says that there was a census that was decreed by Caesar Augustus. That one little phrase was just an in-your-face reminder to the whole nation of Israel. You are under the thumb of Rome. You are not a free people. It was Herod that was leading in Jerusalem. And for the people of Israel, it had been so many centuries since they remembered back to when there was a king on the Davidic line ruling over Israel. There was government darkness. And the nation of Israel was divided and fracturing. There was political division. Can you imagine that ever? There were four parties that fought to lead Israel. There were the Pharisees. They were the religious leaders that sought to lead the nation through their religious practice. They believed in the Mosaic law, but they also forced the traditions of men onto the people. There was a group that opposed this. This was a group called the Sadducees. And they believed also in the law of Moses, but they didn't believe in a strict adherence to the traditions of the Pharisees. So they fought each other bitterly, theologically. There was another group of people, another party, if you will, called the Essenes. And they just said, we are gonna disengage from the culture, disengage from the darkness and the brokenness, and we're just gonna live a pure life on our own, apart from other people. Then there was a group called the Zealots. These were a band of brothers that they believed that what they were called to do was to violently, if necessary, overthrow the Roman government to free Israel from Rome. These competing sects were battling for the leadership of Israel. There were riots in the street. The tension was unceasing. Sound familiar? Political darkness. And these were just the things that were surrounding the outside of Jesus' life. There were challenges that he was born into, even as the Son of God. Jesus was born into extreme poverty. When we tell the Christmas story, we talk about this reality that the Son of God, God come to earth, was born in a manger, in a barn, a humble beginning for the King of the world, the Creator of the world, born in a stable. Why was it that they were unable to get room in the inn? Because just like then, today, money talks. If they would have had resource, they could have gotten a room, but they had no resource. Financial darkness. The birth of Jesus came through a virgin. We tell that story when we recount the Christmas story and we think about Mary and we hold her in high regard and think of her as this young teenage girl that was just this picture of faith and devotion. But the story also tells us that her husband Joseph had in mind that he was going to divorce her quietly and put her out so there would not be so much shame for her. Because what did he know? He knew that shame was coming. And it did. Everybody, like we look back and we understand how this was conceived, but everyone in that day, they knew where babies come from as well. They knew how conception takes place. This is going to be the woman, the promiscuous woman that gave birth to Jesus. Throughout his entire life, there would be the whispers and the finger pointing. Oh, he's the one. Social darkness. I said earlier that Herod was the one who was king over Jerusalem at this time. And Herod was the most paranoid, ruthless leader that Rome had ever seen, that Jerusalem had ever seen. He was so paranoid that someone would take his power from him that he actually had people in his own family killed so that nobody could challenge his authority. Well, now Herod, he hears in the Christmas story that there's this new king of the Jews that's been born. And he thinks, I need to find this king. So he tells the wise men, you tell me where the king is at so that I can come and worship him. He doesn't want to worship him. He wants to exterminate him. When he realized that the wise men have tricked him, he decides that what he's going to do is have every boy 2 years and younger killed in and around that area. Genocidal darkness. Do you get the picture? Darkness reigned in and around the things that were happening around Jesus' life, and even the things that were happening in his life. Jesus knew darkness. And that's why the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah 9:2 would say, and I'll read it again, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. But it is so important. In the midst of deep, solid darkness, if there is a light that shines, it grabs our attention. It is magnificent. It's beautiful. I think about it this way. Think about what a jeweler would do if he wanted to highlight the beauty of a gem. He wouldn't just hold it out to you in his hand to show off its beauty. What do? They put it on a deep, dark cloth, sometimes velvet, a black backdrop. And when the light shines on that gem, it sparkles, it's magnificent, it is beautiful, it grabs our attention. That's why light matters. Jesus, the light of the world, came into great darkness so that it would grab our attention. Here's the bad news of Christmas today for us. 2,000 years later, this world can still be a very dark place. I was thinking about how to describe this, and I was just thinking I could just read you some headlines of the things that are happening all around us. Just look at your news feed. I decided I don't need to read it to you. You see it. You experience it out there and in your personal life as well. You see it everywhere. Wars, hatred, division, violence, injustice, abuse of power. And you see relationship strife in and around your world, anger, anxiety, depression, loneliness, isolation. Darkness still exists. This world can still be a very dark place. Now, I imagine if I ask people, who wants this world to be a dark place? I don't think anyone would raise their hands. But a question would be, how do we push back the darkness in this world? And there's lots of opinions out there. What is the answer to the darkness that we see and feel? Here's what I think people think oftentimes, is that we've got it within us to bring the light to the darkness. If we just pull together, if we just pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, we can accomplish this. Maybe it's just education. We need people to understand more about what is true in this world. And then the darkness will be pushed back. For some people, it's a government solution. We've got to get the right people in office, my people in office, making the right laws, and then we will push back the darkness. Maybe it's a financial issue. If we just put some resource toward the problem of darkness, it'll be fixed. Maybe it's technology. I mean, technology just keeps growing and growing. Maybe AI, that's the solution. It's gonna take us to the place where we once and for all overcome darkness. But the story of Christmas tells us that we don't have in and of ourselves what it takes to bring light in the darkness. We don't have the light within us. That's why Christmas happened. The light needed to come to us. This is what Jesus said in John chapter 8 when he was talking again to all those that would see him, that he was the light of the world. John 8:12, he says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me, everyone, whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Jesus wants us to experience him. And that's how darkness is pushed back, one heart at a time, one life at a time, one person at a time that grabs a hold of the light in the darkness, grabs a hold of Jesus. That's what he came to do. That's the message of Christmas. But the truth is not everybody responded when Jesus was here. John, and when he was kind of theological account of the Christmas story in John chapter 1, he talks about what happened when Jesus showed up on the scene. Not only what happened, but I would even just say what is still happening. John chapter 1, starting in verse 9, it says, "The true light," speaking of Jesus, "that gives light to everyone," everyone, all people, "was coming into the world." John says, "He was in the world, and though the world was made through him," get that, John explaining, this was God come in the flesh. The world was made through him. It was the voice of Jesus that spoke and created everything that we see. That the world was made through him. The world did not recognize him. They didn't see him for who he really was. And then it says that he came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Two things that didn't happen. People didn't recognize Jesus. Then maybe they heard his claims, but they didn't actually see him for who he really was. And as a result, they didn't receive his message. They didn't receive him into their life. But here's a question I want us to ask. How does a person know if they've actually recognized Jesus? How do we know that? Well, I think in the Bible, it was really, really clear. When people actually fully understood the magnitude of Jesus' claims, and they thought, "I believe that this is true," I want you to understand that the responses to him were not mild. They were not indifferent. There were strong reactions to Jesus. Some were incredibly fearful. It's like, if this is the God-man, if this is a divine human, I am scared. Get away from me. I don't know what you're gonna do to me. People were fearful, a strong response. Some were furious. Some realized that if his claims are true, people are gonna start to follow him. It's gonna undercut our power and authority in the religious world. Some people were furious and they wanted to kill him. Strong reaction. But there were some, even many, that their response, when it actually dawned on them and they recognized who he was, who he claimed to be, that they actually just simply knelt down and they worshiped him and they made him king of their life. They just said, "I'm gonna follow you." And that's why Jesus said, "I'm the light of the world. Anyone, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness." Do we recognize Jesus? Do we recognize him for who he is? And I want us to just think for a minute a couple things that we know would be true about God. If the story that we're talking about is true in any way, if this really happened, if there really was a baby born in a manger in Bethlehem, God come to this earth, here's one thing that we would know 100% certain. God understands, Jesus understands darkness. Not only darkness in general, Jesus understands our darkness. He understands you, and he absolutely understands your experience. Because if that's true, God came to this earth, and God knows what it's like to suffer. God knows what it's like to even feel the tension and the frustration of family life. He knows what it's like to feel the ache in your body after a hard day's work. God knows those things because he experienced those things. God knows what it's like to have to be courageous, to stand up in the midst of injustice. God also knows what it's like to be abandoned by your closest friends in your greatest time of need. And God knows what it feels like to be crushed by injustice. He knows what it's like to be tortured and to die. That's the story of Christmas. That's what Christmas tells us, is that God understands us. But a second thing that we can say, it's not just that God understands our darkness, that he understands what we're experiencing, but he actually cares about it. That's why he entered in. It wasn't just so he could experience it. He wanted to change it for us. And the reason he came is that he wanted to deal with the root cause of our darkness. And the root cause of our darkness, as we understand from Scripture, is that we are separated from a relationship with him. We're separated from a relationship with God. Again, quoting the prophet Isaiah from Isaiah 53, when he was talking about what Jesus would do, what the Messiah would do when he came, he said this, "But he would be pierced for our transgressions. He would be crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we're healed." What did Jesus come to experience? Piercing, crushing, punishment. What did we bring to the table? We just brought our transgressions, our iniquities, our sin. Jesus came to die in our place, to pay the penalty for our sin. And that, friends, is what brings peace and healing. That's what he accomplished for us. He wanted to bring us peace. I was just looking through a handful of Christmas cards that were sitting on our washing machine, and I just noticed how many of them, actually just on the front of them, say, "Peace on earth." Jesus came to bring peace on earth. But what was the peace that he came to bring? Was he talking about international peace, that nation was going to love nation, that there wouldn't be wars? Not at all. In fact, when Jesus talked about what it was going to be like in this world before he came back, he says it's actually going to get worse before it gets better. He said there's going to be wars and rumors of wars. He didn't come to bring international peace. Did Jesus come to bring peaceful life for you? That your life would be easy and smooth? Not at all. He said if we follow in his footsteps, his promise to us is that you will receive in this world, there will be trouble. You'll receive trouble in this world. There's gonna be challenges. The same things that he experienced, we will experience. What is the peace that Jesus brings? He brings peace with God. He bridges the gap between us and God. The word is reconciliation. He brings us into a right relationship with God. The hymn that we often sing around Christmas time, "Hark the Herald Angels Sing," a great hymn by Charles Wesley, he just nails this truth. He says, "Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King." We just sang this earlier. "Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled." That's the peace that Jesus came to bring. Peace with God, reconciliation with God, whom we are estranged from. He reaches down into the darkness to pull us out. But the question is, how? How do we do that? Isaiah doesn't leave us hanging. He goes on to explain. In Isaiah 9:6, and this is oftentimes on Christmas cards as well, this famous verse from Isaiah, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given," is what he's given. He's given as a gift of grace. When you think about the gifts that you might receive in and around Christmas, you don't get those because you work for them, because you earn them. They're given out of the love and the grace of another. That's the picture. A son was given to us. He'd given to us so that he could die on the cross in our place to pay the penalty for our sin. What do you need to do with a gift? You need to receive it. But to receive a gift, sometimes it can be a little bit humbling. Like just imagine if under your tree right now is a gift from somebody that you love. It is a brand new shiny book and you're so excited about this, you open it up, but you realize that this is a book on dieting. How would you feel about getting a gift like that? If you were to truly receive that, you would need to humble yourself and say, "I need this. This is important for me." There was one time when I was younger that I was shopping for Carmen and I wanted to get her something from Bath and Body Works. But I mean, you just go in there and there's just like bottles and smells. It's just like, just crazy in there. So I was standing there looking at all the stuff there, trying to figure out what in the world would I get her. And this young gal that came over to help me, and I just said, I'm confused, I don't know. What would you suggest? You know what her suggestion was to me? She said, "What's really popular right now is cellulite reducing cream." I was like, I don't know exactly the message I want to send on Christmas, but I know that ain't it. Because it would be humbling to receive that as a gift. The gift of Christmas. I don't think that there's anything that causes us to swallow our pride and to humble ourselves than the gift of Jesus. And here's why I say this, because to receive that gift, we've got to say to ourselves, I'm lost and I need help. I am walking in darkness. I need to grab a hold of the life. I don't have the light within me. I don't have what it takes to rescue myself. I'm not gonna be able to pull it all together and pull this off. Jesus, I need you. And he understands that. And that's why he came. But Jesus said, I read it earlier, that he came to this world, but most people neither recognized him nor received him. They didn't see him for who he really was, and they didn't grab a hold of the gift. But some did. John didn't finish where I quit reading earlier. Here's what John says as he finishes this out. In verse 12, he says, yet. That word yet, a word of hope. Yet, to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children not born of natural descent, nor of human decision or of a husband's will, but born of God. Reconciled. For those who did receive him, he gave the right to become children of God. We're not estranged from God. We're not apart from him. We are reconciled to him. We become his children. We do that by receiving him, putting our faith and our trust and our hope, not in our ability to bring the light to this world, but in the reality that he brought the light to us, and we grab a hold of him and we say, thank you. And we choose to follow him. He becomes our light in the darkness. I want to give you an opportunity to hear the story of a couple of our friends that are part of the Journey Church family here, Avery and Nate. I want you to hear their story of how Jesus became the light in their darkness.
A year ago, if you would have spoken to me about God, I would have dismissed his presence completely. I definitely went through some hard times in my life that left me feeling really alone. And in my early 20s, I went through a divorce. From there, I really was left searching for answers. What was the point of life? What was the point of my life? Why are things so hard? And having been a person that struggles with mental health and battles almost daily with God, and I've been having a really hard time accepting what's been going on. I've lived so much of my life in darkness.
I grew up in Bozeman. Grew up in the faith, so I was really brought up learning the doctrines of the faith, and I got out of high school and joined the Marine Corps and kind of became distanced from my faith. It had never really been that mature, I don't think, and it had always been more intellectual than anything else. Did 5 years there, I got out, and really felt like the rug was pulled out from under me. I didn't feel like I knew who I was anymore. I didn't feel like I really had an identity anymore. So I felt really adrift. I really struggled.
Like surgery, and it burns like third degree, and you wonder what is it worth when your insides breaking in and you feel that ache again, and you wonder what's given birth. If you could let the pain of the past go of your soul, none of this is in your control. If If you could only let your guard down, if you could learn to trust me somehow, I swear that I won't let you go. If you could only let go your doubts, if you could just believe in me now, I swear that I won't let you go. I won't let you go.
On June 25th of last year, I remember I just really fell to my lowest point. I was having a super hard time accepting all the new challenges that I was faced with in life. And I was sitting in my kitchen and I just grabbed the Bible, which I hadn't even opened or looked at since I was really young. I don't even remember what I read, but all of a sudden it just overcame me and I really was hit with this sense of peace. I knew that God was talking to me and he was trying to tell me that it would be okay. I really have found an amazing group of women that I get to share meals with and Bible study and just life with. And I feel really lucky to have such amazing people that I can either help guide or be guided by. I know that through them, God is working.
And a little bit before I got out, my wife and I had started going to church. We joined a community group that's kind of working in the background and supported me, I think. And about 6 months in, I think the first time I ever had a moment of real surrender with God, where I felt just really pushed up against a wall and like I had nowhere to go. And I really just cried out to him, basically said, whatever I'm doing is not working, and it's your turn, please. Because it's just clearly my way is not working. So that really started me on a new path and started bringing me towards a more mature and real faith instead of just an intellectual one.
When your fear is currency and you feel that urgency, you want peace, but there's war in your head. Maybe that's where life is born, when our facades are torn. Pain gives birth to the promise ahead. Yeah. If you can let the pain of the past go, of your soul, none of this is in your control. If you could only let your guard down, if you could learn to trust me somehow, I swear that I won't let you go. If you could only let go your doubts, if you could just believe in me now, I swear that I won't let you go. I won't let you go.
With both my parents simultaneously going through health hardships that are unfortunately life-ending. I really feel like I've been walking in the pitch black lately, but that doesn't stop the light that I do see on the other side. That is God. I know that he's everywhere in sorrow and happiness. I know that God's there with me and my brother, and I do believe that. So many people struggle internally daily, and I just want you to know that you're not alone. God is always there with you, and to lean on the people in your life because they're there for you too.
I got to get baptized here on the stage, and since then, nothing went away. None of my struggles went away after I got baptized. If anything, they became more acute. They came to the surface with a lot of strength. God was forcing me to deal with things that I had never dealt with before and things that were maybe blocking me from my relationship with him, whether it was a bad habit or just a mindset or a spiritual posture that wasn't allowing me to rely on him the way that we need to. And it's often been a painful but also really joyous time as I work through things and accept God's presence more fully. Throughout my entire life, God has been so faithful to me. No matter what I was doing, he always had a plan. And so here I am because of him.
If you could only let your guard down, if you could learn to trust me somehow, I swear that I won't let you go.